This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. The 2010 midterm elections are approaching ever so quickly, and many people are talking about the Tea Party and what it may mean in this election. It's not the first time a third party has gathered some attention. Here to talk with us about third parties through history, our history doctor, Bill Smith. Welcome back.
Glad to be back.
So the Tea Party, they are certainly an interesting political development to watch.
And I think development might be a good word to use there. They like to call themselves a party, but it's a loosely associated group of voters, really, congealing around two or three issues. Third-party politics have almost always been issue-oriented, although there are a few notable exceptions where personality would drive the groups, especially in the 20th century. Theodore Roosevelt comes to mind with
Bull
his
Moose.
Presidential run, the Bull Moose Party. Ross Perot, where it was Perot and then they invented a party to go with him. John Anderson, of a name from the past, often overlooked in 1980. And the Kingfish himself, Huey Long, with his share the wealth scheme during the 1930s. But, you know, those four exceptions, it almost always is a group of issues that get people motivated.
You say issue-oriented. What sort of issues often bring a third party to the fore?
Well, sometimes the issue is one that can launch a party, a true party. Certainly, that's what happened with the death of the Whigs in the mid-19th century, which eventually gave rise to the Republicans. Remember, Abraham Lincoln was only the second Republican presidential candidate and a bit of a third-party president because it was abolition, the single issue that really motivated the Republicans at that time, and they were able to eventually congeal that into one of our two major parties today.
So does that mean what we're seeing now in 2010 is the birth of a new party?
I doubt it. The reality is that this is an issue movement, and we've certainly seen our share of those. They lack the organization to actually launch a presidential candidate and to really last as a cohesive unit.
So then who would you compare historically the Tea Party or this Tea Party movement to? The Founding Fathers?
Well, the original individuals that fostered the Tea Party were, of course, the Sons of Liberty, well-to-do New Englanders who were opposed to the taxations and other restrictions that had been visited upon the colonies. In late 1773, Samuel Adams, not to be confused with beer of the same name, and others came together to plan this act of disobedience in Boston. In the sense that these were part of a growing resistance to the British Crown, yeah, you could say the Tea Parties are similar from colonial times and now, but it's not a really apt comparison.
Is there an apt comparison?
Well, I think the populace give us a better analog at the end of the 19th century because they might show us where the Tea Party could go if they can stay together. Remember, the populist platform took advantage of some serious economic upheaval in 1893 and 1894, and they combined in a way with the standing Republican Party to have a big impact on the 1894 midterms. But by 1896 and the presidential election, many of the issues, most important being silver coinage and money issues, had been co-opted by the Democrats. So the populists tended to have ideas that became part of other movements, and they themselves were the outgrowth of the Grange and other social political movements that had gone before him. It was sort of a cycle in which the populists were the name to this group that had an issue. Now, they did manage in 1892 to pick up 22 electoral votes for their candidate, James Weaver, but they were really more about the issues than about the politics. Right now, though, in many ways, if you just had to take a single snapshot of today, the Tea Party most resemble another 19th century movement, the Mugwumps.
The Mugwumps. M-U-G-W-U-M-P-S, the Mugwumps.
Yes, indeed, and you look somewhat puzzled by the Mugwumps. They were a significant number of Republicans during the corruption of the Gilded Age era that bolted from the party to support the reform candidate of the Democrats, Grover Cleveland. They got the name Mugwump, referring to an Algonquin Indian word for important person or kingpin. But cynical newspapermen quickly twisted that into sanctimonious or holier than thou for the way that they had abandoned their party over principle. It's that moralistic tone and the fact that with them behind Cleveland, he was able to win the White House in 1884 that also lead the term mugwump in politics to refer to a disloyal political splinter group.
Well, last time I checked, the yard signs in my neighborhood, there was no one who said vote mugwump, vote reform, vote bull moose. What does it take for a new movement, a new party? What's next for the Tea Party?
Well, you know, I think November's results are the key. You know, will they really have the impact that they are being advertised to have? And once they've had that impact, will they stick together and form themselves? Will they be simply reabsorbed by the GOP? Not unlike the Students for Democratic Society blossomed on the far left wing of the Democratic Party in the 60s, and once their issues were either addressed or time had removed those issues, they drifted back into the Democratic Party. The Goldwater Republicans, who came and went in essentially a single election cycle during the 1964 campaign? Or will they take over the host organism, like we saw with the Reagan Revolution in the 1980s as they toppled the East Coast-oriented Rockefeller wing of the GOP at that time? Either way, it doesn't seem terribly likely that the Tea Party continues on to the presidential cycle 2 years from now. I'm going to take an educated guess and say they seem more inclined to follow the path of the populists, who have their best ideas absorbed by the party they came from, the populists to the Democrats, and in this case, the T to the GOP.
Wouldn't some third-party people over the course of history say that's okay if we made enough of an impact to change the discussion or change a major party stance or make them a certain way that part of the goal there has been accomplished?
You're right. And that is one of the things about the American system, particularly the Electoral College winner-take-all system, that in a presidential cycle almost reinforces two parties. The question becomes, do you take over a party from within, or do you break out to the outside again? 1860s with the Republicans and Lincoln, they had to actually break away. They still needed the help of the remnants of the dying parties to support them in their electoral bid. But that's the thing about the way our presidential cycle works that really keeps us into the two channels. Whether or not the Tea Party can brew up enough discontent to become the permanent other party, who knows?
So change can happen. It's just rare.
That's right.
And until that next change,
we're history.
Bill Smith earned his master's and his PhD in history at the University of Arkansas and teaches history at Northwest Arkansas Community College. And a week from today, Election Day, Bill will be back to give us a quiz about many past third parties in American history.
Is it a party quiz? I'll give you the name and you'll tell me yes or no. Is that a real American third party?
So did this third party actually exist at some point in American history?
Right.
Our history doctor with a third party quiz on Election Day a week from today here on Ozarks at Large.